Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio today, Campus FM University Matters, Reverend Dr. Hector Sherry. Just a few words about my guest. He's head of the Department of Fundamental and Dogmatic Theology, Faculty of Theology here at the University of Malta, and a lecturer since 1998. He's president of the Theological Commission and of the Ecumenical Commission of the Archdiocese of Malta. That's since 2008. He's Censor Theologus and has been appointed director of the Foundation for Theological Studies. That's a recent appointment in November 2010. He's the author of several publications, Koinonia Diakonia and Martyria in 1999, Nilmho Iljmilta Christu and Iljmilta Fiditana, editor of an anthology, Living Theology, and also Ftuh al Sacerdotali, that was in 2010. He's a member of the Società Italiana per la Ricerca Teologica, the Associazione Internazionale Henri de Lubac, and of the Catholic Theological Association of Great Britain. A very warm welcome to you, Father Sherry.
Thank you for your welcome.
You're here today to talk about this really interesting conference that's coming up in June, entitled The Religious Quest, a seminar on spirituality and culture in the Mediterranean, which is organized by the Faculty of Theology and the Theological Commission. And of course, we'll give details about the conference at the end of the program. This is a fascinating area. The Mediterranean Basin has such a varied and interesting history of religious development. And looking through the list of speakers, all very erudite and well-known speakers on various subjects, I can see that the conference is going to have a very wide scope with regard to what you will be discussing. And I suppose one could, in a rather provocative way, I would say you're going to be discussing what is religion, the big question.
Yes, indeed. Yes, what is religion? Well, religion, I mean, in any part of the world, after all, not only in the Mediterranean, is, you know, man's search for meaning, man's search for someone or something which is transcendent. You know, man who tries to find an answer to those basic questions in life regarding birth, death, you know, life cycles, the question of evil, pain in the world. So anywhere in the world, you know, we can say that wherever humanity exists, there is some kind of religion, some kind of belief. And so, yes, what is religion? It is, you know, man's search for the divine. I mean, I like to look at religion as a journey, a relationship between man and someone with a capital S.
Obviously, it is something that has been basic to human needs from time immemorial, really. Mm. And the Mediterranean Basin is probably one of the best or a very good place to start to study that development. Looking back, I mean, I see from the list of speakers and talks that you're going to go right back to the Paleolithic, to the Mesolithic, to the Neolithic eras. What reasons, I suppose we'll be looking for reasons or ways in which ancient peoples tried to cope with those overwhelming mysteries that you've just spoken about life and death, that looking around them, they had nature, sun, moon, stars. This is sort of, was their way of coping, in a way. It was a coping strategy, perhaps.
Yes, of course. I mean, You mentioned the Mediterranean, and, you know, after all, we have to mention that there are other very great religions elsewhere in the world, of course. I mean, and some are even more ancient than the Mediterranean religions, you know, like those in the Far East, you know, like, you know, India and China and Japan and so on. We have little information about religions in Africa, for instance. So, yes, there are those primitive religions and tribal religions. Though the Mediterranean, because of the way it is geographically, and the fact that, you know, people journeyed, it was so easy to journey from one end to the other, because, well, it is an extensive area, but not too extensive. So people could travel even thousands of years ago, and of course they shared opinions, they shared beliefs, I wouldn't say they would proselytize, you know, in that time. I mean, people would, well, I think we're more tolerant then, because we find several of these religions coexisting peacefully. But again, the basic question remains man's search. Man's search to know more about himself. Man who sees himself, herself, as a limited being, and who is overwhelmed when he sees the sun, the moon, as you said, you know, the cycles of nature, other natural happenings, you know, earthquakes and so on. Man who dies, man who is a mystery to himself, and therefore who seeks to find an answer to these mysteries.
As you were saying, it was easy for people, or relatively easy, for people to move around the Mediterranean. I mean, they used to coast hop, obviously, mostly. Yes. And at a certain point, people came to Malta. And as we see from our absolutely magnificent monuments, the Neolithic period temples, they set up here a very interesting manifestation of some sort of spirituality. And you were saying before we went on air that you'd recently visited Hadjaimun of Nidra and how impressed you were.
Yes, yes. First of all, the choice of the theme, because the theme, you know, is centered on Malta. I mean, because it is an international conference, and the idea behind it, you know, behind the organization of this conference, this seminar on the religious quest, is to show that Malta is indeed a confluence of cultures, of religions. And Malta, the place it is situated, so at the very center of the Mediterranean, of course, I mean, makes it a hub. It was a hub in ancient times, and you mentioned the megalithic temples, and it remained a hub, you know, in other eras. So, I mean, it's a very basic notion behind the seminar, you know, Malta as a place where religions meet. And this has been said then on other occasions by other people, you know, by popes, by politicians, you know, a place where cultures, where civilizations meet. And that is why Malta has often been called, you know, an oasis of peace, a place where religions can meet and interact, showing tolerance, showing mutual respect, and even being constructive in the road to peace, to world peace. So you mentioned the megalithic temples some time ago. Yes, indeed. I mean, we have something which is so precious, you know, dating 5,000 years. As we know, they are UNESCO heritage sites. And, well, those temples were places of worship. They were solar calendars, you know, they marked the seasons. They were mostly situated close to the sea. So again, even though Malta isn't a large country, but again, the sea, so the interface between sea and land, life on land, you know, agriculture, but also fishing by journeying. So Malta could have been also a shrine. So, in fact, I was visiting the Hypogeum some months ago, and I was lucky to have, you know, Dr. Trump, you know, Professor Trump, who was showing us around. It was a very unique occasion. He's the expert on these places. He was explaining that, well, the Hypogeum and Malta would have been a burial place. People wanted to be buried in Malta. You know, people from other places. It's quite a thing, you know, in those days, you know, wanting to be buried in Malta. You know, these cults, which we associate with fertility, with Mother Earth.
That idea of Malta being a hub, being a sort of a religious, or let's call it a spiritual centre within the Mediterranean, is not one that's held by all archaeologists, of course, yes. But it is one possibility. because obviously there are so many temples, or there were, whereas we have evidence of so many temples, which must have cost a lot in terms of human resources, the equivalent of financial cost at the time. And the question always remains, why? Why were there so many on this island and on Gozo? And that could be one of the reasons.
It's one of the surprise. There are so many of these temples in Malta, you know, and as you say, I mean, the actual, you know, the way society was organized. So there was some kind of organization. Someone was leading. Someone was coordinating things, you know, carrying these massive stones. And these temples were also covered temples. So we might get the impression they were uncovered, but they were actually covered temples. I mean, the architecture seems to indicate that. And also, you know, the intricate designs we find there. And of course, their actual positioning, you know, to actually be a calendar.
This idea of the religious center idea is also held out by, I mean, there are lots of different ways, obviously, of expressing spirituality and religion, not just the temples, which are sort of very, very obvious things, but also artifacts.
Yes.
And also later on text, because obviously if we're talking about the temples, we're talking prehistory. We're talking but obviously within the Mediterranean, then we get these incredibly important texts that have become fundamental readings for everybody. I mean, in not just in the Mediterranean.
Yes, in fact, the conference will be touching upon, for instance, you know, these ancient Jewish texts, for instance, you know, the pre-exilic texts in the context of the Near East. One of the lectures by Professor Anthony Frendo will be actually dealing with that theme, as will be the theme on the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know, and their significance for biblical studies, for the study of ancient Judaism and early Christianity, a lecture by Dr. Dennis Mitzi of the Department of Oriental Studies. So, yes, we know about these texts. These are important texts, of course. We have to see these texts also in conjunction with the Bible, because most of these texts are biblical texts. But then we have the New Testament, which is so fundamental to early Christianity. Yeah, so that would be, so as one may see from the program, so there will be so a day dedicated to general themes, you know, faith and culture, spirituality and culture, man as a religious being, as we've been trying to say. But then one of the days will be dedicated to Judaism, and then a day to Christianity, and Christianity in Malta from the 1st century to the 18th century.
Yes, I'm seeing here this Don Juan will be talking about early Christianity in
Malta. Yes, the expert on Pauline Christianity and early Christianity in Malta.
And also Professor Fiorini talking about Christianity in the Maltese Dark Ages. That's also, I think, going to be very interesting, because that is a much discussed period where, there's the move from the Byzantine culture then to the Arab invasion.
Yes, and the whole question of the discovery of that text found in Spain about 30 years ago, and which has been translated into English, you know, that's a Greek text of that exiled person in the Arab period in Malta. You know, I suppose Professor Fiorini would be touching upon that important discovery of his and his colleagues, Professor Horatio Vell and Monsignor Busuttil, and the recent publication on that. Professor Malia Milanes would be talking about the Knights of St. John. Again, it is his speciality, you know, aspects of Hospitaller spirituality. So rather than, of course, I can't predict what he's going to say, I don't know, but I mean, from the title, I can see that it's not a question of history or historical details, but, you know, since the title is Aspects of Hospitaller Spirituality, he would be focusing on the actual spirituality which led this group of men, the Knights of St. John, to do what they actually did in Malta and elsewhere. Of course, they were in Jerusalem before that, in Acre, in Rhodes, and then in Malta. So again, I mean, these knights who journeyed, who at one moment seemed to have been supporting pirates, you know, Maltese pirates in the 18th century. Well, I mean, we have to see what our distinguished lecturers would be having to say on these themes.
Yes, this about the hospitals. They were in one way this real hands-on example of spirituality through their care of the sick.
Yes,
and they were very avant-garde in many of their approaches.
Yes,
to that.
Well, in fact, we noted a shift. I mean, in their orientation, because they started as a military order, and then they seem to focus more, and rightly so, on this caring dimension, which has now become their dominant feature, because they still exist today, as we know. And they are, of course, they're called the military order, but I mean, they actually have many philanthropic endeavors all over the world now. Yes, I mean, that would be a very interesting team. I mean,
a little bit also controversial in the sense that they were at the time considered sort of the last bulwark of Christianity.
Indeed, yes.
And were celebrated as such, really. And they were also, in a way, as you've suggested, they were privateers, really. They were corsairs, mm-hmm. with a difference kind of thing.
Yes. Well, of course, the context then was a different context than now. I mean, of course, you know, Islam was seen much as a threat. I mean, today, of course, though difficulties still exist, but, you know, we tend to be, you know, more respectful to each other. But, of course, in the 17th and 18th centuries, but even before that, you know, the great threat of the Crescent, you know, to Christianity, and Malta being a bulwark, you know, the Great Siege, and, of course, Lepanto in 1571, and other events, you know, the Siege of Vienna in 1682. So, of course, there's this this coming together at times of war, unfortunately. But, I mean, I hope that this conference will help us to, well, appreciate more, you know, how much religions have in common, how these three monotheistic religions, which, you know, which engirdle the Mediterranean, have in common, after all. Yes.
In fact, that was a question I wanted to ask you, really. Why do you think monotheism ultimately was the winner, really? Because, as we've been saying, there have been different ways of expressing religiosity and spirituality over the millennia, and these have included these polytheistic religions different ways of looking at, certainly not monotheism. Monotheism did sometimes come in and then go out again as a fashion, in inverted commas. But ultimately, you do have the three great monotheist religions present very strongly within the Mediterranean. Why do you think monotheism was so successful in the end?
Yes, so if I go back, you know, a step, you know, prior to what you're saying, I mean, because, yes, there were the Roman religion, you know, Egyptian religion, Mesopotamian religions were all polytheistic. And, you know, in these religions, we tend to note, you know, man, of course, in the search of the beyond, of the transcendent, and creating, if you want, gods in his image. You know, man creating, within inverted commas, gods in his image. So a god of beauty, a god of love, a god of wisdom, and so on. But as you said in your question, yes, eventually the monotheistic religions took over and remained, to date, the predominant religions in this area of the world. So in my opinion, I would say that, you know, why do we have Christianity, Judaism, and Islam around the Mediterranean as being the dominant religions? It seems that monotheism offers a focus to man. So rather than presenting a whole pantheon of gods, there is a god, who embodies many qualities. You know, the Muslims give 99 names to God, you know, titles to God, the merciful, loving, and so on. Christians, of course, also give God many titles. The same thing with the Jews. So, yes, I would say that these monotheistic religions have focused their attention on a god who embodies many qualities, qualities which were also present in polytheistic religions, as I said before.
But
so
perhaps this God is more abstract. The gods, say in the Greek panoply, were very human in their ways, in their manners, in what they did, although they were gods. Whereas the one God seems to be less human than they were, really. More, I hesitate to say abstract, because obviously we do give a human face to God as well.
Yes, we give a human face to God in Jesus Christ. I mean, for Christians, the human face of God is Jesus Christ, God who became man. Well, there is, of course, this sense of, yes, abstraction, speculation, but at the same time, I would say, yes, there is this. But then the concept of faith comes in. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam have this important dimension, this constitutive dimension in each respective religion, which is a concept of faith. So not seeing, yet believing. Not seeing, yet believing. Whereas in the polytheistic religions, I mean, they tended to have statues, you know, adoring, you know, stone statues, or going to the oracle at Delphi, or looking at, you know, at the mountain and, you know, and seeing thunder, or hearing thunder, and that was Zeus, and so on. But again, I would put an emphasis on the concepts, on the truth of faith in the monotheistic religions. So,
but there are some very interesting, also very interesting overlaps. I don't know whether this is going to be discussed by any of your speakers, as the monotheistic religions grew, there were things that were taken over from the previous religions, ideas. They yes. do have a lot in common in that sense.
Of course.
The sense of history.
Yes, I mean, of course, between Christianity and Judaism, even the main Christian feasts are Jewish feasts, like Passover, like Pentecost. These are all Jewish feasts. So again, or as the point of contact between, say, Christianity and Roman religions, the Feast of Christmas, for example, you know. We have no exact date for Christ's birth. Yet, I mean, Christianity baptized, if you want, a Roman pagan festivity, the Feast of the Solum Victus in December of the victorious sun, S-U-N, sun. So we have this kind of even the same thing between Christianity and Islam, and this is very present even in our own Maltese terminology. So certain, you know, even the word for God in Maltese is Allah, like Allah. So, and there are many other examples of the confluence between Christianity in Malta and our surrounding Semitic cultures.
And I imagine that this is one of the aspects that will be discussed during this conference.
I'm sure it will somehow, you know, come up, you know, in one of the lectures being given.
I'm seeing there is going to be the President Emeritus, Dr. Ugo Musubonici, talking about culture, history and religion, the Maltese experience. I'm sure that will give a very interesting overview.
Yes, indeed, I'm sure, I mean.
And also Rania Fsadni, talking about popular religiosity in the Mediterranean. Now, that's quite a hot subject, really, and he's going to give it a Mediterranean, not just a Maltese aspect.
Yes, I mean, being an anthropologist, be talking of this, of this anthropological substratum to religiosity in the Mediterranean. Of course, again, I mean, Maltese religiosity stands to have things in common with Spanish and Sicilian elements. But of course, we have to wait and see what our guests would be, our lecturers would be having to say on the respective themes.
Yes, I think at this point, because we don't have much time left, we'd better really give some information about how you can be contacted to apply to come to this conference.
Yes.
Of course, it's open to everybody, and I think this is one of the things that we wanted to do as we chatted, was to explain to people, tell people that this isn't a conference just for religious or people who have a particular interest in spirituality. It is also going to be about many other aspects or things that come into the religious sphere with regard to the religious quest. So I think it's important to say that it's really a conference for everybody.
Yes, in fact, the subtitle is a seminar on spirituality and culture in the Mediterranean. And again, it's open to people from all walks of life. We have, you know, participants coming over from Bangladesh, you know, we have two Buddhist monks. That would be an interesting, you know, cross-fertilization of ideas, you know, with our brethren from the Far East. We have a participant from Gambia, and we have several, of course, Maltese participants so far. And, of course, I really extend an invitation to all who are listening to the program, you know, to contact the Faculty of Theology at the university, visit the Faculty of Theology website, or even to contact Maria Bugey at the old university at the Valletta campus.
You could give us her telephone number.
Yes, her telephone number is 21-24-07-46. 21-24-07-46. Or else you can contact her via email on maria.bugey@muhc.com.mt. So
that's it. I'm sure that this will create a lot of interest.
Perhaps we could say the venue of the seminar.
Yes.
So the
plenary session, I think,
the inaugural session is going to be held at Palazzo de Pira, which has been recently refurbished at Mdina. Mm. That's on the 20th of June. Palazzo de Pira, it's a wonderful place which has been refurbished, but then the remaining sessions, so from Tuesday the 21st to Saturday the 25th of June, the venue is the Archbishop's Seminary at Tal Virtù Rabat.
So no problem of parking.
No problem of parking. And lectures will be held only in the mornings because, you know, in afternoons it's very hot. So lectures will be from 9 o'clock to 12:15. So quite a convenient, you know, time of day.
Very good. Well, thank you very, very much, Reverend Dr. Hector Sherry, for coming to talk to us about this conference, The Religious Quest, which will be happening between 20th June and 25th June next month.
Yes.
It's upon us. You've been preparing so long.
So long.
And it's upon us.
Yes.
And thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.